Cause I know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody who knows. I know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody who knows.
And welcome to AFL Tonight. This is ArenaFan.com's weekly look at everything arena football. I am Tim Capper along with Adam Markowitz. Playoffs, sir. Playoffs, right?
Yeah, I'm waiting for my call up to the big leagues, though.
We mentioned last week that there were a few games on the schedule that really did make a difference. And for all those who don't know or weren't paying attention, we want to at least let it be mentioned how we got to where we are coming into week 21, or as we like to call it, the road to the Arena Bowl.
Yeah, everything was really in control of the teams from the East. The Cleveland Gladiators knew if they could take care of business and end up having home field advantage throughout the Arena Bowl inclusive, and they were able to do that. But the last playoff spot, which is the, I guess, more interesting of the races we were talking about, ended up not going exactly according to plan because first Philly gave it away, and then Tampa gave it back.
Philly really gave it more than away.
Yeah, the Soul were beaten down by who did they lose to? Pittsburgh.
Yeah, Pittsburgh.
And a game that was never close. It was never ever close. Dan Marottabaugh gets benched in the third quarter of the game. It was ugly. So, you know, if you're the Storm, you knew coming into that game it was win. And you're in the playoffs. And it was a de facto playoff game, and the offense really played well enough to win. The defense just didn't. No defensive stops. They got an offensive turnover when Randy Hipper was intercepted, and I forget who was returning it, but he fumbled it in the end zone for a touchback. So technically, Tampa got a stop, but no defensive stops. And the Storm six personal fouls in the game, including a roughing the passer penalty on the last drive of the game that would have made it fourth down for Cleveland. And then on what essentially ended up being the last play of the game, a roughing the kicker penalty on what would have given the ball back to the Storm. So the Storm shoot themselves in the foot. They end up finishing below 500. They finish on a four-game losing streak. This is comes a year after they lost their last eight games last season.
Yeah, I know. And you were there. I know you and Joe Kaufman were there. What was the mood that came from the Tampa Bay side? I know we have an interview a little bit later on with Coach Tunn of the Cleveland Gladiators. But what could you surmise from the Tampa Bay side of the Tampa Bay locker room?
Back to the drawing board, more or less. Mm-hmm. That's really sort of what it sounded like. I mean, I don't think they're going to fire, Lawrence Samuels by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, Dave Ewart got fired for basically doing the same thing. Now, Ewart had more time, obviously, than we've seen so far out of Samuels, so I don't believe that would happen. But, you know, Tampa needs a quarterback. Randy Hipper's not going to cut it. I still can't believe he was the quarterback all year long for this team, with the exception of the short period of time that he was hurt.
Right.
So they need a quarterback, and they need some toughness, I think. I think they're a soft team. They seem to get smacked in the mouth a bit, and they're just not mentally sound. They let close games get away from them. They seem to come up on the wrong end of every single one of the really close games. Now, argument could be made if Tampa has an easier schedule, Orlando has a harder schedule, maybe Tampa wins the division this year. But alas, you still got to play the games as they come. I would have told you at the beginning of the year, two games in the last 4 weeks against Cleveland are wins for Tampa, not teams, games against 17-1 teams.
Right.
So, you know, some of it, but you got to play what's on your schedule one way or the other. I think the Storm have a lot of thinking to do and a lot of rebuilding to do.
Well, yeah, basically when you have the chance and you basically screw the pooch. So it's should be an interesting offseason for Tampa Bay. And let's look at the other one that really had some sort of ramifications for the week. Arizona-Orlando, Arizona coming in was a game behind the Cleveland Gladiators for overall top spot. That seemed to be a fantastic game also over there in the which could be the second-to-last game, maybe, depending on how the playoffs go, the second-to-last game in CFE arena football history.
Yeah, a really good showing by Orlando. Both of those teams played. I don't know whether I don't know whether the play calling was necessarily what it would have been had the game really meant more to either side, but both teams kept their starters in for the most part. Maurice Purifoy, I think, was the only notable name that didn't play for Arizona, and it was a precautionary type of thing for the Rattlers. So aside from that, the teams played full out for three quarters. It was a ridiculous shootout, and in the fourth quarter, neither offense could get a damn thing going. But I said Orlando was going to play with intensity. They were going to play with heart. They did. They won the game. I mean, I don't know what it really means. Bernard Morris took a shot, ended up looking like he had a pretty bad knee injury there for a couple minutes, but was able to get back up and finish the game. So good on the Preds for taking this one. It's the only game they've won against a playoff team all season long, if you believe that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it unbelievable to think they didn't beat a single playoff team until week 19?
That,
20.
Yeah, I know. It's just mind-boggling. I mean, considering you look at the teams that the records for the teams that made the playoffs, you know, even including Portland. It's mind-blowing, and it's just so weird. So, you know, we're going to go look back, I'm sure, Adam, at the end of the year and into the offseason and look at how the schedule was done this year. And we're really going to reflect saying, you know, either A, it was a stroke of genius the way that it was done, or B, it was just just the total opposite, obviously, because, you know, was it division versus schedule, schedule versus how the divisions were set up? I said, well, that's something we'll talk about a little bit later, too, but in weeks to come. But here's one question I want to ask you before we start the rest of the show here, Adam. What was your take on the quarterbacks that were rested and the quarterbacks that were not rested?
Now, I think Orlando and Arizona were both crazy to let their starting quarterbacks play, especially letting Bernard Morris come back out there after he hurt his knee.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was just absolutely nuts. I get it. I get why Cleveland did it. You know, you win the game, you're going to host the Arena Bowl if you can get that far, regardless of what else happened in Arizona. I don't think there was ever any sense of letting the foot off the gas pedal at all mm-hmm. for Cleveland. I mean, they clearly played to end Tampa Bay's season, even when they knew they could basically name their opponent for the first round of the playoffs. You know, I think Portland and Spokane did it right. I think Spokane had no reason to play Eric Meyer, especially with his injury history.
Right.
I don't think Kyle Rowley had any reason to be playing for Portland. We know what he is, and he's gotten the snot beat out of him, you know, lately. So, you know, obviously Philly had to do what it had to do. I don't agree with Pittsburgh playing Tommy Grady.
Yeah, I know.
You've won 11 straight games at that point. I get it. I get why they would want to do that to sort of keep rolling, and damn if they didn't ever.
Yeah, and who knows? Who knows if Radabaugh, even though he went, 11 of 35 before he was pulled, absolutely atrocious. You know, was Brian Rendell, was he scheduled to come in sooner than he did?
No, he couldn't have been. It was a must-win game.
Yeah. So,
I think the better question that begs to be answered is, what is the leash on Radabaugh this week?
Yeah, well, mind you,
if they ball down 21-0, is he going to get pulled?
Depends on what it is, because remember, at halftime for in the Pittsburgh-Philly game, it was 27-7 at halftime. Pittsburgh, I think, got the ball after halftime, so they got the first possession, and they went up 34-7, so I think right there you knew, you know, it was...
Yeah, but I'm saying, what happens, that game, yes, it had to feel like do or die, but it wasn't necessarily do or die, and what happens when it's a second straight week?
Yeah. They've been up and down. Really,
it'd be a fourth straight week because Philly hasn't scored more than 40-some-odd points since destroying Iowa.
That's true. Very interesting. Well, we have quite a bit to talk about. Yeah, I was not surprised about the Spokane. I was not surprised. I know, I said, for Philadelphia to start Radabaugh, I was not surprised with that. But, yeah, Pittsburgh I was very surprised with. After hearing about Orlando and what happened to Morris, yeah, I was very surprised. Like, I saw the highlights there. But, yeah, and same thing with Arizona. We know Marietta can play, but come on. If he goes down, well, you know, and it's something that we're going to talk about in a little bit later about when it comes to the playoff teams in the NFL and that type of thing. So we could sort of use that as an example when we get to that point. But, it's now win or you're done, basically. Win or go home. we're in the base. What is it? What is a weird terminology? Anyways, I digress. Let's continue. Interesting information that came over, I think it was almost immediately, Adam, after the last games were played this past week. Some very interesting information came out of Iowa. And it came out locally from a TV, I think it was a TV or radio, WHO is a radio station, I think. Radio or TV? TV station. And it basically said that Jeff Lamberti, their owner, stated that the Iowa Barnstormers are looking at the idea of possibly moving from the AFL, dropping the AFL, and going to a lesser league or another indoor league. It actually got a lot of Iowa Barnstormer fans antsy. You know, they love their football in Des Moines. But to hear this, and if I'm not mistaken, this is maybe the second year in a row or second out of the last three that they've done this. How do you think it makes the Iowa Barnstormer fan base think when this comes about? And looking back at the potential ramifications from a team switching to a different league, how it could easily – it could kill a franchise, couldn't it?
Yeah. You know, I think if Iowa fan wants consoling, they can go to Kansas City fan, because the same thing happened to the Brigade/Command.
Uh-huh.
When they decided to go play in the – which league did they go play in?
I think it was the Champions League.
Yeah, whatever –
Champions Indoor Football Professional League or whatever it was. Yeah.
Alphabet League.
Yeah.
You know, when they went to do that, obviously not nearly the same thing. You know, here's the thing. If you're Iowa, why would you stick around the AFL? You don't have a team within driving distance of you. You don't have a natural rival. You know, you're stuck playing so many ridiculous road games. Your costs, you don't even have a major airport right near you. I mean, Des Moines is as big of an airport as it gets. You know, I don't know whether you can get direct flights from Des Moines anywhere relatively cheap. You know, why not? I mean, why would you stay, I guess, is the way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when the team's got to be losing money hand over fist. Has to be with all those travel, you know, those travel arrangements that have to be made.
Right, and everybody just has to look at it. I mean, there are some teams that really are in no man's land this year. If you go over to, you know, if you go and look at the
San Antonio,
yeah, you go look at the map of all the Arena Football League teams in 2014. Really, you know, Iowa is a sore thumb. San Antonio is somewhat of a sore thumb, but then again, the closest one next to them is New Orleans.
Which is starting to look a little bit like a sore thumb.
Yeah, so it's really losing Chicago, losing Milwaukee, really, I think, really did hurt, and then putting the Iowa Barnstormers in the East was, I guess...
What were you going to do?
I know, yeah, that's the best that you could do, and...
Put them in the West? I mean, what are you going to do?
But look at how their schedule was laid out. You know, it was like a no-win scenario.
And, you know, there's a point to be made about the fact that they can't, quote, get big-time free agents at Des Moines. And it's nothing against Des Moines. I'm sure it's a lovely place. But it ain't Florida in March or in February when at the start of the season. It's not any of those places. It's not Florida. It's not Phoenix. It's not L.A. or San Jose. It's not any of these nice places. And you still got to deal with the state income tax there. There's, you know, it's kind of the sticks. For lack of better, you know, lack of better terms, you know, so it's tough for Iowa. So I don't know. There have been some successful, drops, not necessarily from the AFL.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because what history will tell you is AFL teams who drop have trouble, even though the Iowa Barnstormers were one of them.
Albany did not.
Didn't work in Albany.
Yeah. Yep.
Where else has it not worked? It didn't work in a few other places, but
I would say okay. I would say OKC. Tulsa was always an AF2 city, up until moving to the AFL and then.
Yeah, I think one thing that can be looked at is perhaps the Green Bay Blizzard.
Yeah.
From the AF2 down.
Yes.
Which was not something out of the ordinary. You know, we know the Spokane Shock thought about this, of dropping down to one of the, whether it be the IFL or whatever it was. You know, for a while. So I think it's less of a drop now that it's scary to think that I think it's less of a drop from the AFL to, for example, the IFL than it was from the AFL to the AF2.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. No, but yeah, it's now on the other side of the coin here, Adam, we see what they have done. Because this was put out into the press and it was done literally right after the Iowa Barnstormers season had ended, could some fans of the league think that maybe that this could have been a ploy to get it noticed, to get it known what they are thinking of doing, whether it is they're thinking of doing it at 70%, 70-30, or whether it's still 50-50, or whether it's 40-60. Is it a ploy by the team to say, listen, we are entertaining the idea. We'll be happy to stay with this, with these possible changes. And then they XXX, they go in and they lay them out.
I mean, but if the changes are going to, you know, put teams in the Midwest, mm-hmm. who's buying teams?
And when? That's a good thought, because if
so, I mean, if that's the stipulation, if the stipulation is to make things cheaper, that would be counterproductive to what the AFL seems to be trying to do. I just don't know what this could be a ploy to do. I think this is dead serious, and I think there's no reason to sort of doubt that. And you know, there's something else to remember in this too, and you know, it's not to be degrading to the AF2 teams who came up. But when the AFL started again in 2010, there were clearly AFL owners and AF2 owners.
Right.
And not a lot in the middle. The AF2 owners are all virtually gone. The only ones that are left, per se, are New Orleans and Iowa.
Yes.
Because even, you know, Spokane, which number one was a good candidate to become an AFL team at some point from the AF2 anyway. But number two, their ownership with Brady Nelson is gone now as well.
That's right.
So literally all of the AF2 guys are gone. And this was probably a part of the growth that the league needed. I don't want to say it had to get rid of the AF2, you know, the AF2 guys, but to grow, you need money. And, you know, it's not the fault of these AF2 owners that their budgets used to be significantly smaller. You know, it's a lot harder for one of these AF2 teams who is used to being on a budget for the year of maybe, what, $1 million, $1.5 million, to start spending $2.5-3 million a year than it will be, you know, for an AFL team to come down that's used to spending $7-8 million a year and now is spending $2 or $3 million.
No, that's true. And you look as an example, we can talk about, you know, advertising revenues and whatnot. Look at some of the huge names that the LA Kiss were able to pull in for advertisers. There's only so far that you can go with local advertisers. You know, if you were to be able to pull in a Denny's like LA was, if that was a National League sponsor, okay. That would be, you know, they would be getting some sort of a monetary, I'm sure some monetary, you know, monetary feedback for that because of the sponsorship. Maybe it was a test. We'll find out if the league announces anything else, but could that be another reason too? Cause you look at it, you look at other teams and other markets and other sports too. You cannot survive. You really cannot survive on local, advertising, and I'll
Predator sure as hell didn't do it this year.
Right, I'll give a good example too. The Montreal Expos before they moved to Washington, the exact same thing. It was local. You really can't do anything. You have to have something national. And you know, we're not talking millions of dollars here some of these NFL teams make. Even in the CFL, there are some national sponsors. Mind you, there's a bigger TV contract in the CFL, but that's another conversation for another day. But
thank you, Tim Hortons.
Yeah, but it's I guess there are a lot of variables. I think to start, I don't know. Would it be the same thing if Chicago and Milwaukee had stayed?
Probably would have.
I think it would have been better because the travel would have been less.
That's still only two games.
Depending on how,
still seven more travel.
No,
things.
I know it, but it depending on how it was done. I mean, just look at where Iowa traveled this year, Adam.
It was all over the place.
That's the problem. I mean, sure, they had, you know, they had Pittsburgh in their division, they had Philadelphia in their division, and they had Cleveland in the division. Cleveland technically was the closest place for them inside the division. And then you look at their schedule. Now, did they head out to the West Coast? Yes. First two games of the year, they're out in the West Coast. First two games. Travel down to San Antonio. They travel down to New Orleans.
Well, those are the closest games. I mean, last two. Well, maybe not San Antonio.
No, luckily.
New Orleans isn't that far.
But I think everybody got strapped. Everybody was on the East Coast, had a West Coast trip of some sort, but for team, you know, yes, they're farther away, but I think for teams like Iowa, like this, I think it hurts a little bit more. I guess for them, having to play teams three times inside your division did help them in some way. But now, if we were to, from the story that we saw, we haven't heard anything else. We've not spoken or asked for a comment from the Iowa Barnstormers organization. Adam, if you were to basically, would you call this truth that was put out there, or do you think it's a load of hooey?
I think it's the truth. I would guess Iowa won't be back next year. That's my guess.
Okay.
Then again, I said Orlando wouldn't be back. So. Yeah.
I think some things would have to change. I think it would have to be, let's see, because you think about it right now, the only team that we know that's coming in the league is another Western Division team, and it's going to help the teams on the left coast. It will. So I would hate to see the franchise go. I know a lot of fans would. It's a great. I know there's been a dwindling of the attendance in Des Moines, but it's a great fan base. It's a great and dedicated fan base. So we'll have to see how it goes in the off season, but I would hate to see them go.
We got to start buying up those beanie goggles if
yes.
They do.
Yeah. Yeah. Hats or the –
That's what they should do. Yeah. They should just do a huge push to sell those things.
There's only so many things you can put the goggles on. They've done the hats and they've done the toques. There's always
never going to get old.
First, by the way, before we get to anything else, I want to at least make mention of, you know, Adam, this year – Tucker Flags has been a sponsor of our Q&A section, which will be, that's the segment that's coming up. I just wanted to at least acknowledge all of our 2014, Reign of Fantasy Champions. As I said, Edirne Fantasy was brought to you by Tucker Flags this year. All of these teams will be receiving their own personalized, flag from Tucker Flags, and we will be contacting you shortly if I happen to mention. But I'll just do this real quickly and we'll get back to the show. Pick'em this year, it was Lou in Denver. For Pick'em points, it was Rosh Rush. The spread Pick'em was Rattlers Forever. Quick play was Short Bus Kids. And in the Deluxe League play game, leagues, in the Barry Wagner League, it was J-Wex. Ben Bennett was UFO. Eddie Brown League, it was it Arel 101? Jim Foster League was our own Dave Carlson. He beat me in the championship game by 20 points, so AF Dave. Perry Moss League was I-57 Chevy. And a repeat winner also for this year, so he's going to be getting two of them, Adam, is Tim Markham. In the Tim Markham League is Rosh Rush. So congratulations to all of our players and who took part in Arena Fantasy this year. It was one hell of a season, and we'll be getting in contact with you very, very shortly. Okay. We've seen this happen during the year for the teams for the CFL. But for the past couple of days, we've seen some pretty big names get picked up by NFL teams, because obviously this time of the year when we're doing the show, Adam, and then when the league is around, where these guys are going and being picked up by the NFL teams because their camps are either about to start or have started. This is actually affecting quite a few playoff teams, isn't it?
Yeah. The Portland Thunder, who... Probably, I don't know, has a nice way to say their offense sucks. It was built on their defense this year. Losing arguably the anchor of the defensive line, Jake McDonough, to the Washington Redskins. Obviously a bit of an AFL tie there with Jay Gruden.
Mm-hmm.
And Mario Norman, maybe the more notable of the departures from the Cleveland Gladiators, their leader, Their team leader in interceptions this year has gone on to the Baltimore Ravens.
Yep, second in the league, and second in the league in interceptions. And it was who was it? Who was the other one that just came back from a tryout from Indianapolis? From also
Dante Page.
Yeah, Dante Page Moss. So he's actually he was taken off the league's suspended list after he went for a tryout. So it can affect these teams. And this, I mean, we need to clarify again, this is only for guys who went to the NFL. Yes, there were some guys who were signed during the season that are still playing and a part of CFL rosters. Portland being Eric Rodgers, I'll give an example, Eric Rodgers. He's with Calgary. So one thing I think we need to look at here, Adam, is that with all this that has occurred, we've had early seasons before. We had early seasons in the NBC days. What do you think it would take, or if there is a, it is feasible to have the league shift their season so that the Arena Bowl is done before NFL camps start?
Well, there's two logics to this. First logic is, why is the season so long in the first place? Because if you shorten the season by 4 weeks and knock it down, you know, maybe get rid of the second bye week.
Or
even both bye weeks, and then knock it to 16 games or knock it to 14 games, you could finish up the season this week, roughly, you know, or last week, I guess, as the case may have it, when none of these guys will get picked up by training camp. Then maybe you have a wink-wink deal with the AFL. You don't come and pluck, you're not going to start your camp until after our Arena Bowl's over, so don't pluck our guys until your camp starts. And I think that would be something that's plausible. So that's the first question that I would beg to ask from that standpoint is, why not cut back to either some sort of 16-week schedule?
Right.
It's also possible you could take the week out between the Arena Bowl and the last playoff game. That's a week that could be saved in there as well.
That would possibly mean a change, though, to going back to a neutral site game. Well, obviously, we don't know what's happening this week, this year. You know, we have the week in between because it is a non-neutral site game. They want to be able to do this. That's a very good point, too. But, I'm trying to think what else would be possible. What else can they do other than those two things?
The problem that, needs to be brought up is the fact that these arenas are really hard to get into. When you look at Pittsburgh, the Console Energy Center, you've got the Penguins there. When you look at the Flyers, when you look at the Soul, they've got the Flyers, they've got the 76ers there. The Storm have the Lightning there. So the AFL will never be a primary tenant. So the problem is a lot of games are going to end up being pushed to weird days. Now, in the NBC era, that wasn't such a bad thing because the NHL never played a lot of games on Sunday. So a lot of the AFL games were then played on Sundays. The problem is now NBC has hockey. So hockey does play on Sundays. The NBA does have its national games on ABC and ESPN on Sundays.
Right, yeah.
It's a lot tougher to get into these markets on any night of the week, really. Let alone a primary night. And, we see this with the Soul. Philadelphia keeps having to play games on the road to start virtually every single season. And this year was no exception. They played four games on the road, to start this year because of arena availability. So you can't just push back the league into, say, a February start and a July finish. But I think it would be very plausible to make the adjustment either to a shorter season or to get rid of the bye weeks or whatever the case is.
Yeah, I think what we came up with earlier about making slight modifications to the schedule itself might be, because, God forbid, Adam, if, let's say, a Nick Davila was taken.
That's exactly what my point was when I brought this up to a few people. It's okay if it's anybody else on the field but the starting quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I will show you how quickly any team, how quickly Arizona would become a pick'em against Portland. How quickly that would happen.
Mm-hmm.
The quarterback in the AFL is worth more points, and I'm going to go a little gambling lingo here on you, is worth more points from a gambling standpoint than any other player in any other sport period.
Wow. Okay.
Not even close.
Makes you wonder if that had happened. Hasn't happened yet. I mean, we've had player quarterbacks that were picked up by CFL teams, and some of them came back, or different players. But yeah, it's, you know, now that the NFL, if you don't get in, you're back. But if you get into the camp, camp's 4 weeks. And for some of the teams, it's longer than that. Sorry, that's four preseason games. So camp's longer than that in the NFL. But yeah, it's, I would hate it. It really
so, I mean, it's there's not a lot the AFL can do right now, because, look, if the NFL calls for any shot whatsoever, they're going to go.
Right. And I don't think it matters what players could possibly be paid in the AFL. If the opportunity is there, there's always the out, as far as I know, in the standard contract, and there's an out because of what's currently in the collective bargaining agreement. I know that wasn't in years past. You know, there were different clauses for an F, the NFL or CFL comes the calling. So it's interesting, but I really hope, Adam, with all honesty, that it does not hurt a lot of these teams that are in the playoffs. It can. Look, as I said, look at Cleveland's situation. That's what, 12 interceptions that they have to replace in their backfield?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that can be very, very big. And it's going to be very interesting to watch and see what happens. So it's, yeah, Mario Norman, yeah. 12 interceptions, tied for second in the league. So it's, yeah, it can be very interesting. So, Adam, I know you said you were in Tampa this past week. You were very lucky to be able to speak and get a short interview with head coach Steve Tunn. Give a quick teaser, and then we'll play the interview for everybody.
Well, obviously a very happy man off of a win. Most happy. Most coaches who come off of wins are happy. But a little look at the context of the history of a man who didn't have the best AFL career in terms of wins and losses leading up to this point.
Okay. So we'll go ahead and listen to the interview, and we'll be right back to finish the show.
And I'm joined by Coach Steve Tunn of the Cleveland Gladiators. Coach, first of all, congratulations on a win tonight and the best regular season in AFL history. What does that sound like to you?
You know what? It's amazing. I mean, going into this year, we didn't think anything about that. Really, we were just kind of strengthening the next game and making the playoffs. That was our goal at the beginning of the year. So, as it got closer and closer, we knew we had a chance at it. Then it was getting home field advantage, see how many games we could get home field advantage. And now setting a record is just, I mean, it's great for Cleveland. It's great for our guys. I mean, our guys really have made it happen.
You and Coach Selesky and so many people who you've been around for so many years have been through so many bad seasons with other teams, whether it be Cleveland or some of the Grand Rapids years.
Right.
What does it feel like? Is it vindication now?
You know what? A little bit. I mean, it's been, you know, I've been in arena football for 26 years now. And, you know, you always hope to have a team like this. You know, you hope that everything goes your way and you get good guys and then, you know, they keep fighting all the way through. So, I've been on some tough teams with some tough situations with owners and where we've been at. So I don't know if it's vindication, but I tell you what, it really is a great feeling just to be where we're at.
You've got 24 guys in that locker room, and so many of them were around for last year's 4-14 team. How did all of this change by 13 wins?
You know, we knew we were going to have a tough year last year. We had a lot of young guys who hadn't played, so we thought, hey, our goal was to keep getting better. And the record didn't show up, but we did keep getting better. So at the end of the year, we thought, all right, we got 10, 12 good core group of guys that we want to get back. And then our goal after that was to really get some AFL vets that can really blend in with those guys. And, you know, getting DJ and getting Willie McGinnis and Colin Taylor and, you know, Shane Austin. I mean, we added some really, even though they might have only had a year or two under their belt, the veterans, Luke Black, the veterans that we picked up really blended with our guys pretty quickly. And you know, again, we just focused on, hey, we got a lot of vets. You guys know how to play the game, and let's just focus on one game at a time and see how good we can get.
You mentioned Shane Austin, the guy who you brought in, presumably to be your backup quarterback, to Chris Dieker, and he goes out and throws for 99 touchdowns this year. Was that ever even something imaginable to you?
You know, I mean, going into it, we thought Chris was going to be our quarterback. So we, you know, I knew I had a good one in Shane just watching his, you know, he sent his highlight film from the started three games in Pittsburgh, and you can tell he got it. He got rid of the ball quick. He got back quick. He made good decisions. So I knew we had a good backup, but then you saw him in training camp, and you're going, wow, he's pretty good. And I keep saying it's not so much that, you know, Chris, yes, Chris faltered a little bit, but it's not so much that Chris is a bad quarterback. It's just that we really knew that Shane could be a real good one, and he's had a great season.
You ended up in a situation this year, you averaged a little bit over 50 points a game, not the typical AFL thing with 60 points per game, 65 points per game. In fact, no one's actually won the Arena Bowl averaging less than 60 points per game in almost a decade. Sort of, how would you put this together with an offense that really wasn't the prototypical AFL offense that we've seen lately?
Well, I think at the beginning, it goes by possessions. We had a lot of games early in the year where we only had the ball eight times. I think we had three games where we only had the ball. And that's, you know, it's our defense makes them work. So when you only get the ball eight times, you know, we'd still score seven or eight, but we'd only have 35 or 40, but our percentage was great. So even though we weren't putting up a lot of points, our percentage was pretty good. And so that's what we concentrated on. And we said, hey, when we get the 10, 11, 12, 13 possession games, you know, and then we have the chance to put up 60 or, you know, more points. So I think since, you know, about week eight, you know, I think we've averaged close high 50s or close to 60 since the last eight games. So, you know, the offense took a while to click, but Shane was new with the quarterbacks too. And they've worked hard. They work after practice and they've done a good job.
You seem to pull off all of these games that are decided by one score, as we saw tonight against Tampa Bay. What has it been about this group that those games that maybe would have been losses last year are wins this year?
I think we talked about it a lot in training camp. We said, hey, we're not going to blow anybody out. We're going to have a lot of tough games this year. It's arena football. Every game's going to come down to the fourth quarter, the last possession. So we started talking about in training camp that, you know, hey, keep finishing, keep playing. A lot of things can happen. Obviously, you know, things have gone our way, but we've made plays too to finish off the game. So I think the mentality all year has just been, don't stop, just keep playing. You know, good things will finally happen for us.
The road to the Arena Bowl now officially goes through Cleveland, and that road starts with next week's game against Philadelphia. So what are your first thoughts on that matchup?
It's going to be a tough game. I mean, you know, Philly, you know, they're still loaded with talent. They're still a great team. They've had their struggles this year, some ups and downs, but they're a very dangerous team, and we know that. And we've had two tough games against them, so we know it's going to be a tough game. We know they'll be ready for us, and we're going to be ready for them. So it's going to be we're glad we're at home. You know, when you get to playoffs, it really doesn't matter who you play. That's why we wanted to win this game and go into it strong. Once you start thinking about, oh, we need to play them or we want to play them, you know, I think you get in trouble. So our goal was, hey, let's keep doing what we've been doing all year and then do that in the playoffs.
You said, Coach, you want to go in the playoffs strong. Was there any consideration about maybe benching Shane halfway through or anything like that?
Not really. I mean, because we didn't know what the Arizona game was, and we thought it was important. Hey, we still have a chance to host all the way through. So since we still had that chance, we thought we owed it to everybody to try to win that game and get there. So, you know, I guess if there were some other circumstances, maybe we'd have thought about it. But during the game, we just wanted to win the game.
A very passionate guy. I mean, we've been able to have interviews with many coaches and players, but he was genuinely happy with how not only the game ended for them, but how their regular season went in Cleveland.
When you think about a guy who'd been through the traveling Thunder Bears, the down years of the Grand Rapids Rampage, you know, the 6-10 Grand Rapids team that ended up going all the way to the conference final or the semifinals or whatever they called them at that point, a couple down years here in Cleveland, to be able to be cemented in history like that at, you know, 17-1. That's a football history thing. Uh-huh. That's not just an AFL history thing. It is just pretty freaking remarkable when you think about it from, you know, top to bottom. You know, but what's still sick about Cleveland is you don't really think of Cleveland as the best team in the league. I mean, most don't. Most would figure that this is a team that maybe is the second best team, maybe he's the third best team, maybe he's the fourth or fifth best team in the league. And the reason for that is because they just don't kill teams. You would figure at 17-1, they're going to outscore teams by a massive amount, but they only outscore teams by 11.6 points per game. Now that's a lot, but it's only fourth best in the league this year. And over the course of the last three seasons, the team that's been the top seed in the playoffs has been averaging killing teams by over 15 points a game.
Yeah.
And you've got to remember, they all lost more games, so they've really been beating teams if you just want to look at, you know, the margin of victory here. In the actual victories has been pretty damn remarkable. But, you know, look, this is the Cleveland team that beat Philly twice at the last second, mm-hmm. won five games, on the last play of the game.
Yep.
Came back from down three scores a couple times.
Yep.
To win really a remarkable season from a remarkable team.
And has had two major winning streaks and stuff like that. And the playoffs will be very interesting starting this week, and we'll be getting to those in a couple of minutes here, but, like we do every week, we're gonna have our fan Q&A, a few questions that came in, and as it has been all year, our fan Q&A is brought to you by Tugger Flags. As we mentioned earlier in the show, they were the official provider of all of our trophies for all of our fantasy teams this year at arenafan.com. If you're looking to have one of your own personalized flags, make sure you get in contact with Adam or myself, and we'll make sure we get you in contact with them over at Tugger Flags, and you can get one at the price that we are offering the special through us here directly at AFL Tonight. Tugger Flags, get a piece of the game. First question, were we the ones that came in from Twitter, Adam? First question came to us from Christopher Vestal. It sort of goes towards the question that we had mentioned before about Iowa, and I think we may have answered it completely, but do you think an arena football team might publicize considering moving, quote-unquote, down to the IFL in order to get attention? And I think it's something that you and I actually pointed out. Yes, it's to bring forth an issue that they are having, and it's too early to tell what will happen, but I think they have done what they needed to do, right?
I still don't think it was a bluff. I think this is an actual issue, so I don't think this is posturing by any stretch of the imagination. I think this is going to happen.
Okay. But as I said, yes, I think a team would do this. They would moving down in order to get attention, but it's, as I said, I think they'll be back. I know you're thinking the other way, but either way, it's getting their issues that they currently have out to the general public, and hopefully the league will take a little bit of notice. Here's a question we've answered before, but I know Mark Saul wants to know, what would it make a player to go on suspended by league list?
What can't the player do to get put on the suspended?
Well, I think what he's looking at, some of the stuff that happened earlier, maybe this week too. Usually, from what we're seeing, to be suspended by the league, you're either going to be A, really suspended, or B, you are in the midst of getting a tryout, whether it be with a CFL team or an NFL team. And that's what happened with Paige Moss, as an example. He was on the suspended list almost immediately after the week ended. He's now back off of it because his tryout with Indianapolis he didn't end up staying with the team. So it's suspended by the league really does not mean you're suspended by the league. Suspended by team is something different altogether, but suspended by the league can mean usually one of two things. Either you're in the doghouse or B, you're trying out for another league. So, very interesting question comes to us from Scott. What happens if Pittsburgh and San Jose make the Arena Bowl, Adam? Neither building is actually available August 23rd or even August 24th. That could be a huge cluster, couldn't it?
My.
Yes, it could. And we actually...
Send in the clowns.
Yeah. We were actually able to get a comment from a source who is close to the situation. And what we found out was that the league actually has been working with teams and arenas in case of such a scenario arises. However, If they do end up being unable to use the home arena on the 23rd, and I'm guessing also the 24th, a backup arena in the area will be used for the game. Now, that last portion of the comment itself, Adam, is quite interesting, isn't it?
Well,
because I mentioned it before.
I think we should need to take this in a couple pieces. Number one, the first thing that you said about the game being moved to the 24th, I sincerely doubt there is any circumstance in which the game's date would be moved.
I agree.
Or time would be moved for that matter, because this is an ESPN thing.
That is correct.
This is a main network, mothership, ESPN, not the Deuce, not the U, not the anything else, not the Ocho.
Not the three.
This is just ESPN. So nothing's changing from that standpoint. Where they play the game, I sure hope from the league's perspective, the game is either in Cleveland or in Phoenix. Because otherwise, there's gonna be a mess. When they say other arenas in the area, I don't know what else is actually in Pittsburgh. I don't know whether they could actually fit this thing in the Peterson Event Center, at the University of Pittsburgh. I don't know what else is out there in San Jose whatsoever. I don't know what they're talking about. Perhaps moving the game to Philly.
The Cal Palace.
Pittsburgh.
The Cal Palace. No. We did double check. Phoenix, Cleveland, Spokane, and Philadelphia. There are no issues when it comes to the home arenas. We actually did check, by the way. Yes, we did check for Portland also.
And oh, there's no need to check for Portland.
I know.
They can't host the game.
Yeah, but we checked anyways.
And Orlando's kosher.
Yeah, and Orlando is kosher also. So, and what's funny also, you know, with all the stuff about Siegel and the Amway, Amway's available on the 23rd, Adam.
That'd be funny as hell. Make Pittsburgh and San Jose play as far away from Pittsburgh and San Jose as possible.
Wow. Then that's the case. I would see that happen. You know what? That's funny, Adam. Makes me wonder. It's pure speculation that if that was the case, let's say if San Jose did host, watch it be in Arizona. Close enough for San Jose fans.
No.
Close enough.
They gotta find something. There's gotta be 8 million arenas in Northern California.
Anaheim?
I don't know my geography of California.
Play it on the Silver Field. In Anaheim. That's LA. It's a little bit north.
Sacramento or something like
that's
that?
That's too far. No, that's in Northern. That's
too,
in Northern California.
Okay.
That's in Northern California. I'm thinking San Diego, but.
Play it outdoors, man.
Let's hope that does not happen, but that is a very interesting question. And
that'd be freaking cool. Play the game at Qualcomm. That'd be great.
That would be interesting. That would be very interesting.
Watch as an NFL preseason game that day.
Or the Padres. Yeah. Oh, no, I'm thinking wrong. Petco. That's Petco.
And they're playing in Arizona that week, and we know that because we've already looked up the baseball schedule.
Yeah.
So there we go. You play it at Petco.
Yeah. Thanks for asking the question, Scott. Very, very good question. Other questions to us on that you sent to us over on our Facebook page, and some of them we can't really answer. We have answered them, some of them. To Logan Evan, we'll be talking about Arena Bowl matches, possible matchup picks in a couple of minutes. Brian Derry just basically he's talking about why is there a 5-13 team in the playoffs? Well,
because that's what league bylaws say.
That's how it ended
and
up
it's
being.
Dumb. That's
how
Tampa should be. Tampa should be in the playoffs, not Portland. Yeah. We all know this.
Crossover. Mike Dawson was talking about what we were sort of mentioning earlier about how's the league going to survive without possible teams in the Midwest.
Very simple. The same way the ECHL does.
That's right. There are no mid teams in the Midwest. You're right.
It's a completely coastal league.
Yeah, you're right. It is. Yeah. Question from Raymond Brissett. Philly's rebounded from a week 20 collapse in recent years. Are they still viable conference contenders?
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. I think so too. I mean, yes, it was a blip. What happened this week? I mean, 34-7 is a huge blip, but I think once they knew that they weren't going to be in the, possibly be able to what their future was going to hold, they left it in Tampa's hands and we saw how it occurred.
Yeah.
Question from John Benoit. Can the Predators make a deep run? What are their chances? Question mark, question mark, question mark.
Look, there isn't the team in the what conference is it? The American Conference? I still get screwed up by which conference Orlando plays in.
American.
There isn't the team in this conference that I couldn't see winning the Arena Bowl. Because Orlando has proven it can go crazy and beat anybody on any given day, and it can go crazy and get killed by anybody on any given day.
Yes.
Pittsburgh's won 12 in a row. Why can't they win 15 in a row? You know, Cleveland has won 17 out of 18. Why can't they win 20 out of 21? And Philly is still the two-time defending conference champ. And that can't be forgotten. That's certainly, I mean, and it's really not that much different of a team.
No, that's, yeah. I mean, look what they did. I think we talked about the game for a while with the, how it was going to be with the Arizona game, and it ended up being a very big game. So it's, yeah, it really, I think I agree with you, Adam, in all instances where I think that, yeah, it is Orlando has as good a shot as anybody in coming out of
My God. As a side note, when I was, one of the things I was saying in the chat room, for those of you who were in there, during the end of that Tampa Cleveland game, was something had to give at the end of that game, because Cleveland finds a way to win every single close game. Now, Cleveland was ahead in that game and did end up winning it, but the reason I say something had to give is Philadelphia loses every single close game. So, it was either Philly was going to continue we can't win anything, including games that we don't even play in, or Cleveland was going to end up losing its streak of being able to win every single close game. Something had to give.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, the other question, I think that was it for this week. Yep, that was it for this week. So I want to thank the fans again for sending us the questions, and we will ask again next week, obviously, when we start heading towards the conference finals. So, wow, it is now time, Adam. It's the silly season. It's the postseason. One and you're done. I can't think of anything else. One and play golf. Single elimination. I think everybody gets the point.
The time of year the Ottawa Senators always joke. 3 years for Ottawa.
So we have two Saturday games, two Sunday games this week, and only one. I got confirmation today that only one is a national game, and there is going to be only one game that is going to be played locally on TV. But first, let's go ahead and let's start with the Cleveland Gladiators versus the Philadelphia Soul. We know their history this year. Two times in a row, Cleveland has come back and beaten Philadelphia on last-second plays. We know it is very hard to beat a team two times in a row. It can be very hard to beat a team four times in a row, which I know some teams are looking at doing it this week also. Adam, is the 17 wins that Cleveland had in the regular season just as if some fans seem to be as a just due to a light, easy, quote unquote, easy schedule? Or is this a game where Cleveland can honestly dominate and move on to the conference semifinals? Conference finals. Conference finals.
Cleveland's legit. There are no two ways around the fact that Cleveland is a completely legit team that can win the Arena Bowl. Now, here's the problem. All right, I'm going to make no bones about this. Every bone in my body hopes that I'm done seeing Philadelphia. It's a team that didn't deserve to get in the playoffs, a team that took the back door into the playoffs, and it's a team that I'm quite frankly tired of seeing in the playoffs. However, I still think Philadelphia is going to win this game. And I hate saying that, and I hope I'm wrong, but Philly was the better team in both of those games. Uh-huh. Really were. You know, of the teams, there have been 14 other teams in the history of the playoffs in the Arena League that have run the table at home. Only two of those teams went on to win the Arena Bowl, and they were both San Jose teams from 2007 and from 2002. And nine of those 14 teams that ran the table, so nine of the other 12, ended up losing on their home field at some point.
Wow.
So I think, but somehow, some way, maybe in one of those crazy games that Philly always loses and that Cleveland always wins, that somehow Philadelphia will find a way into the next round.
Wow.
Sorry, people in Cleveland. I love you all. You're great. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm coming to Cleveland in a few weeks. But I got to make my picks. You know, somebody's got to lose.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of people are looking at it and how the Philadelphia team has performed the past couple of weeks. And, you know, you made a great point earlier about when it came to how many points that they have scored per game since blowing out Iowa. I just think this is not a Cinderella type of thing for this Cleveland team. Yes, they went from did they go worst to first? I think they went worst to first, didn't they?
They started at the bottom, now they're here.
Yeah, so I think that this is a Cleveland team that it's destiny. I think they will make it to the Arena Bowl championship. From what I'm seeing so far, I mean, I'm gonna give them this win, but man, I think they do win this. A lot of people are saying that Cleveland is going to just blow them out. I don't know. It just, by the way that these two teams have played so far, we've seen Cleveland come back from being down so many. I think it's just a matter of how this game goes. If this is a game, it's a back and forth game, yeah, but yeah, I'm gonna slightly. I know what you're saying too about Philadelphia, Adam. Man, either way, anybody who happens to be at home, the game's on CBS Sports Network. This is gonna be an absolutely amazing game to watch. Amazing game. If you don't have CBS Sports Network at your home, make sure you try to find a way and watch this, because this could be an absolutely amazing playoff game. Probably one, you know, maybe one for the ages. Second game of the week. Late on Saturday, Adam, and this is the game that I confirmed that is not on a local station. They're not showing this game locally in San Jose. Very strange. I thought this game would have been shown on Comcast. But Spokane travels to San Jose.
Yeah, interesting game. Sabercats playing, well, you know, I'll say generally well. I mean, yeah, they kind of dropped a deuce in Pittsburgh, or in, what was that game? Oh, in Philly.
Yeah, scored 20 points.
Wherever it was, they played.
Yeah,
they
got Philly. It was Philly.
But, you know,
Or was it both? I'm trying to think.
Yeah, well, whatever it was, they kind of didn't look so good the last couple weeks of the regular season. Still don't know whether it's going to be Nathan Stanley. Still don't know whether it's going to be, you know, Russ Mikna. I almost said Mark Grieve. It's not going to be Mark Grieve. You know, still don't know that yet.
Yeah, they screwed the pooch in Philly. They screwed the pooch in Philly.
I'm sorry. Yeah. So, San Jose's playing well back at home. When was the last time they lost a home game? I mean, they've been playing very, very well on their home field, have a good history. You know, this is becoming the next, you know, Western type rivalry. But Spokane's a much different team with Eric Meyer.
Week five, by the way. Week five was the last time they lost at home versus Arizona. And at that time, by the way, it was a 2-game losing streak. One to Spokane the week prior and then Arizona the next week.
Yeah. So I'm going to go with Spokane in this game. Yeah, another mild upset, because I think Eric Meyer is a big difference maker.
I'm actually agreeing with you. I'm agreeing with you 100% on this. I think that if we were to call, you know, any team that would pull off an upset this week, it would be the Spokane Shock. And I'm actually, yeah, I think, you know, Meyer will be rested. This Spokane team has seemed to play very, very well since Meyer has come back. So yeah, I'm agreeing with you. I'm gonna go ahead and give Spokane this game. Be the first quote unquote upset of the playoffs. Early Sunday, Pittsburgh, I think you had a stat when it came to teams that were over 800. What was it? I'm trying to remember what the stat was that you came up with.
First team in AFL history to start on the road with at least an 800 winning percentage in the playoffs.
There you go.
And it's only the third time that anybody with an 800 winning percentage is played on the road.
Who would have thought?
NHL history in the playoffs.
They won 15 games and they're on the road.
Start on the road. They're going to have to win three road games in all likelihood.
Yeah. But they travel and play the Orlando Predators.
Well, you can't tell me either side of this game is an upset because Orlando's the team at home. Pittsburgh's the favorite team, won 12 games in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Would anything be surprising in this game? Would Pittsburgh winning by 30 be surprising?
No, nothing would surprise me at all.
Would Orlando winning by 30 be surprising? Would Tommy Grady chumping up four picks be surprising?
He's done it before in the playoffs. See, that's the thing. Go back to his Utah days. He's done it before.
So
he's done it before. And by the way, you're talking about the 12 games. Pittsburgh, they broke the record of the 2007 San Jose SaberCats, which finished the season by winning 10 straight. And it just so happens, just as an addition to that, San Jose actually went on to win the Arena Bowl that year. So just throwing that out there. But man, it's tough to. Tough to say who I'm looking at. This game could really go either way.
I think Pittsburgh is going to win this game. The bottom line with Orlando, zero wins in meaningful games against playoff teams this year, including losing on the last play of the I think it was the last play of the game against Pittsburgh.
Yes, it was.
At home. About 2 months ago.
Yep. Back on May 24th. May 24th.
Greg Carr has become a non-factor for the most part.
What's that about?
Bernard Morris is playing well, but if Greg Carr is not playing well and Virgil Gray is playing center field, remember, Bernard, we dog Tommy Grady for what he's done in the playoffs. Bernard Morris has put up some incredible stinker games of late in the playoffs, and he's tired of playing against teams from Pennsylvania. Because he's gotten killed by Philadelphia the last couple seasons in the playoffs. So I think Bernard Morris is the quarterback who's going to suck more in this game, and I think Pittsburgh will advance.
Just trying to double check real quick here for Grady. Dating back to when his career started in the AFL, he's only been to the playoffs once, Adam, and it was back in 2012 with the Utah Blaze. And at that point, he was 72 of 113 for 767 yards, 15 touchdowns, and 5 interceptions.
That's good, quick math there.
Yeah, you could tell. So that's the only time he's been to the playoffs, and it was against. Was it San Antonio? I can't tell you that. No, that was Tulsa at the time, I think.
No, that was San Antonio. That was Aaron Garcia.
Oh, that's right. San Antonio and up against Arizona. So, I don't know. I think Pittsburgh is going to win this game too, but, talking about Bernard Morris, I'd have to go back and check his stats real quickly too, but,
bad. They're bad.
Yeah. So, hopefully the game is just as entertaining though. As a one back in the last time that these two teams played, so see what happens. That game, by the way, is not televised either. It's on ESPN3. The last game of the week is Portland traveling to the Arizona Rattlers. This game is also on ESPN3, but it is on Cox 7, and it is going to be on Comcast Sports Network Northwest, if I'm not mistaken. Also,
I think it's only the second time this year a road team is going to cover a football game.
Oh, yeah. I was going to ask you what it was. But, by the way, speaking of Cox 7, it should be also online, I think, on Cox7.com. You're talking about spreads. Go ahead and enlighten the people.
Oh, yeah. So Pittsburgh's favored by 6.5 on the road. Cleveland's favored by 7.5 at home. San Jose's favored by 7.5. And Arizona Rattlers are 3 touchdown chalks in this game against the PDX.
So looking at Arizona does hold the all-time series this year. They won 3 straight. Now they talk about teams, winning 4 in a row. Arizona has lost the last 3 of 4, and I think they've lost their last 3 on the road. Is that right?
Yeah, they lost at Spokane, at San Jose, and at Orlando. But none of those games are home against Portland.
No.
And the one that they won was home against Portland.
Yeah. And it's gotten close. You know, that was thrown in between. That was near the end of the year. So, you know,
yeah, I mean, that was a game.
This Portland team is different from the first time that they played when it was a 61-32 win for Arizona.
Portland's a stingy team. Coach Salk has done a nice job getting this team into the playoffs. You know, but look, they've got the third worst record of any team to be in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't think they're a particularly good team. I don't think they're a particularly sound team. Kyle Rowley's postseason history is a good one. That's
about
a good
to say.
Thing.
Yeah.
For them, at the time he had the record, I think he may still have the record. No, he doesn't. For most touchdown passes in an Arena Bowl, but at the time he did. Portland is in this fraternity of sub 500 teams in the playoffs. Oh man, I lost it.
That's okay.
Where's the damn set? No, I'm gonna find this. Okay, here we go. So sub 500 teams in AFL history in the playoffs are 12-25, but 10 of those 12 wins are since 2006, and one of those teams, the 06 Chicago Rush, went on to win the Arena Bowl, and the 07 Columbus Destroyers actually got to the Arena Bowl. So not out of the realm of possibility. That being said, this Arizona team's still damn good, and I think I don't think this is going to be a particularly close game.
Now, I'm looking at the history. It would be a hell of an accomplishment if Portland were to come in and knock off the two-time defending champ, but yeah, I don't see it happening. So, I'm going with them too. So, with Arizona also. People want to know, and I know it's early yet. We at least have to mention it because people want to know how we think when it comes to who's going to make the Arena Bowl. Going by from what you've chosen so far, and I know I mentioned before how high currently I am on Cleveland. If you were to choose, who would be your what would be your choice for the Arena Bowl?
Oh no. I don't want to see another Arizona-Philadelphia Arena Bowl.
No, nor do I.
But I'm going to pick for another Arizona over Philadelphia Arena Bowl.
Obviously in Arizona.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to go for a different matchup with this one. I mean, it would be nice to see Arizona go into their fourth straight Arena Bowl. But I'm going to go with the Cleveland Spokane. I'm going to go with Cleveland Spokane. Why not? Why not? It's unlike years past, Adam, where I put a team in there that I said was going to lose the week prior or something like that. I'm going to go Cleveland Spokane. Why not?
Can you imagine 20 weeks ago either of us even thinking about putting Cleveland in the Arena Bowl?
No kidding. Would not even be close. Would not. No.
I mean, I don't remember what the hell I said. We could check the tape.
We'll have to go back and check.
Yeah. I'm sure I picked Arizona to win the Arena Bowl. I'm sure.
I think we did too. And by the way, speaking of, if you want to go check, you can always head over to soundcloud.com/arenafan. The other 20 episodes that we've done this season are currently there. All the archives are there. Also, do not forget social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, @arenafan. And I know we're revving up our YouTube account for the Arena Bowl and for the playoffs. It is at youtube.com/arenafanonline. So Adam, heading into the Arena Bowl, I know usually you have some sort of off topic thing to say at the end, but for your last words, you got a very interesting stat for those who happen to either not be watching our social media feed, but an interesting stat nonetheless.
Okay, so do you get the Dan Patrick Show in Canada?
Yeah, I think it's on TSN 690 up here in Montreal.
Okay,
yeah.
so you get the Dan Patrick Show.
Yeah.
He does this thing where people call up and they give the stat of the day.
Okay.
And they play the music with it, and I would go find the music if I wasn't afraid that we would, you know, maybe get like sued or something for using it without permission. But anyway, so this is definitely like stat of the day AFL material. Last year in the AFL, there were 1,320 total touchdown passes.
Okay.
In 2014, there were 1,321 touchdown passes.
What?
So take your favorite moment of one touchdown of the year, and that was the one that made it better than the 2013 season.
What's,
by one passing touchdown.
Now, what is interesting with that stat, and that is a mind-blowing stat alone, but considering that scoring was down almost 4 points from 2013, and it is at its lowest mark, 101.9, since 2006? That's crazy!
Well, field goals are down, as they are every year.
Yes, yeah.
Rushing touchdowns, save for Derek Ross, are down this year.
Mm-hmm.
And defensive scores and special team scores, especially, are down this year.
That's crazy. Same
amount. One touchdown.
That's nuts.
In 18 weeks times 14 teams.
That's crazy.
18 games, not 18.
Yeah,
games.
Yeah, you know what? That's a great way to end the show. That's a perfect stat. That's fantastic. We will be back. We will be back next week. We're hoping to have some interviews again for you, as we head into the next round of the Arena Bowl, Road to the Arena Bowl, which obviously will be the conference finals. So for everybody here at AFL Tonight, for Adam Markowitz, I'm Tim Capper. Watch the rebound off the net.